It is time for the Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. We welcome in the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills. All right, boys. So 33 players left in camp. The Flames send 8 players to the American Hockey League. They put a number of other players, 5 more on waivers with the purpose of sending them to Stockton, and then release 4 players from their PTOs. If you ask me, the significant names that jump off the page, Spencer Fu, Oliver Shillington, those are the two for me that are most notable when it comes to Calgary's latest rounds of cuts. What about for you, Derek? Anything jump off the page for you? Anything overly surprising when it comes to these 17 players that they cut down today?
Not really. I'm a little surprised they didn't cut a few more guys because, you know, Bill Peters has talked about needing to ramp up and get ready for the regular season. Now, they are down to one group, so that's going to make it easier on the coaching staff for sure. They don't have to conduct 2 practices, and they weren't going to take 50-plus players with them to San Jose and Edmonton, so we knew there was a big cut coming. But I thought they might try to get a little closer to the number they'll start the season with, and I'm guessing that'll be 23, and I thought they might get down to maybe, you know, 3 extra forwards, have an extra line with them, maybe 1 extra defense pairing, but still 33 guys, including 3 goaltenders, which isn't a surprise, but they've got some more work to do, and it kind of leaves me wondering what kind of roster, what kind of lineup we're going to see for the Flames versus the Sharks tomorrow night, because clearly the Flames still think there are a bunch of guys who have a chance to be on this team and who are battling for jobs right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. They definitely could have cut more. I feel like no one that's going down is a surprise to be going down. I mean, maybe the only thing surprising you could say is that player A is being sent down before player B, but you know, a guy like Spencer Fu, I think we all would expect to see at some point this season, but because he's sent down before some of these more veteran players, I don't think means he's a worse player. It's just, if you know he's going to start in the A, get him down there, get him a camp, get him acclimatized, and you know, let the veterans hang a little bit before you cut him, I guess.
Yeah.
And to be honest, he was in top from the get-go, guys, because he's a right winger, and there's just no room on the right side.
Well, we'll see. I mean, they could also move Frolik to the left, in which case, you know, you're not super right heavy, but I agree. Like, he definitely was a guy that looked a whole lot more probable to make this team before they added the likes of Zarnik, Neal, and Lindholm, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, and we now have some very discernible, not like these are all that surprising, but we have some very discernible names that are still there that we know are right there on the bubble. And I mean, I think Rasmus Anderson has done himself a lot of favors through this camp. We all have talked about Dylan Dubé and Andrew Mangiapane, but now with this group of cuts, that if you're left over at this point, Derek, if you're still on the roster as it stands right now, you know that you have got to put yourself in good standing in these final 2 preseason games. You've got about 3 or 4 more practices to go. If you're still on the roster, this is your opportunity to really kind of solidify your spot. And that's exactly the mindset I think you'd have to be in if you're one of those guys.
Oh, for sure. And guys know if they're really in the mix for a job, whether they want to publicly admit it or not. And I suspect the Flames will come home with fewer than 33 players. I think that they could leave some guys in California because, of course, that's where their American Hockey League affiliate, the Stockton Heat, is located. So we'll see if they leave with 3 and return with 33, or if they leave with 33 and return with fewer than 30. Because, I mean, after these 2 games against the Sharks and the Oilers, it's all about ramping up for the regular season in practices. And I don't think that Bill Peters and the coaching staff is going to want to have a group of 33 guys on the ice next week when he tries to prepare for that season opener versus the Canucks next Wednesday. So I do think there are more cuts coming, likely before the team returns back to Calgary. And I think some guys will probably get left behind. But for those who do get a chance to play in 1 or both of the remaining preseason games, this will be their final opportunity to prove that they deserve to be on the opening night roster or in the opening night lineup. And I'm looking forward to these 2 games. I think it's going to be a little bit easier to evaluate the guys in these last 2 games. Home games for the Sharks and the Oilers, who are doing the same things the Flames are doing and trying to evaluate guys and figure out who's going to be on their 23-man roster on opening night. So I think the fact that you're going to see more NHL players who are trying to get ready for the regular season, that's going to lead to a higher level of competition and a better chance to evaluate these guys.
I've seen the notion out there a bit that this club has carried a lot of guys later into camp than some other teams. They've also not been a group that's got off to great starts of late. Any concern that they're not going to be rolling a tight tight group for the last few preseason games, given how important we all know October feels like it is these days?
Yeah, a little bit. That's why I thought they'd probably get down to below 30 with this round of cuts. And just having more bodies around, I think, makes it more difficult for the coaching staff to get the work done that they need to get done between now and next Wednesday. So I'm not sure when the next set of cuts is coming, but the Flames play the Sharks tomorrow night, and then they're going to stay in San Jose and practice there on Friday before they fly to Edmonton, where they're going to play the Oilers on Saturday afternoon. So I would not be surprised if more cuts come after tomorrow, guys.
He's Derek Wills. He's Ryan Pinder. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is the Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. This kind of came out of nowhere last night when we found out that Corey Perry was injured, and we're like, okay, he's not going to play tonight for the Anaheim Ducks, and it got you wondering, all right, well, what's going to happen? Well, today we find out that Corey Perry is going to miss the first 5 months of the season. He's going to have to undergo knee surgery once again. Derek, I know you've been skeptical about the Ducks and kind of their injury issues. Ryan Kesler, we're not sure where he's at. Now Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaf's getting a little bit older. I mean, there were some question marks about the Anaheim Ducks coming into the season. Now this, Corey Perry out for the first 5 months. What does this do to your overall thoughts on this Ducks team in the Pacific Division?
It's a big blow, guys, because I know Corey Perry was hoping to have a bounce-back season. Listen, he had a down year offensively in 2017-2018, but he still had, what, 17 goals and 49 points? Those are going to be tough to replace. And you know, I've been a little bit down on the Ducks in the offseason because I just think that they have a lot of question marks. And now this is a huge question mark for them going into the regular season. How do you fill Corey Perry's spot? And, you know, they do have some young forwards who are good, but I think this is going to be really difficult for the Ducks to overcome. You know, Ryan Kesler is another question mark. And you're talking about two guys who are not only very talented and will put up fantastic numbers during their careers, but two guys who make the Ducks really tough to play against. And you know, the good news for the Ducks is that Kesler was cleared for contact yesterday. So he's trending in the right direction, but Perry clearly isn't. So the fact that they're going to be without him for at least 5 months, and then you got to wonder, what kind of player is he going to be when he comes back, if he comes back this season? You know, I really thought in order for the Ducks to contend for the Pacific Division title, they were going to need a lot of things to go right. And one of those things was they were going to need some bounce-back seasons from Corey Perry and Ryan Kesler. And maybe Kesler is able to stay healthy and has a bounce-back year, but it ain't going to happen for Perry. I don't have any concerns about Ryan Getzlaf. He still looked like an elite player last year, but I really thought that they'd need their veteran guys to be better than they were last season and for their younger guys to continue to progress to really fight for a Pacific Division title. And without Corey Perry and without Ryan Kesler at 100%, because he's certainly not there yet, I think it's going to be a tough season for the Ducks.
Yeah, I'm going to take the other posture. I didn't think he was very good last year. I think he was probably not as effective as a Raquel or a Silverberg. Even a Cogliano might be sort of the level of production that he gave you. This is not the guy that had 98 points and 50 goals back in 2010-11. This is not a guy that cracked 20 goals. I don't see this as a loss of a top-line forward so much as I would equate it to the loss of a third-line forward. Remember, they did everything they did last year with Corey Perry not being that effective. So it's not great news for Anaheim, but they got some good kids in the system. And if it's more of Sam Steele or, you know, was it Troy Terry, the guy that was a nightmare against Canada in the World Juniors? I mean, I think the strength of this club was never that, you know, Corey Perry was in his prime and dominant. The strength is they've got great goaltending, a pretty deep blue line, and a nice group of forwards. I'm not really thinking this is a death blow to them.
I don't know if it's a death blow, but I think it's a blow, no doubt about it. I mean, Perry, even though he had a down year, still had, and you guys have a computer in front of you.
17.
Google it, but yeah, 17 and 49, right? So, yep. I mean, those are a lot of goals and points to replace. When you're talking about a team that was offensively challenged at times last season, and I really thought that there was a chance that Perry would have a bounce back year, and now that's not going to be the case. Andre Kasha is the one guy who I think is maybe ready to explode a little bit offensively, so I think maybe he can eat up some of those goals and points that Perry's going to leave on the table with missing the next 5 or more months with that knee surgery. But I still think that it's going to be a potentially tough season for the Ducks. They've got a lot of competition around them in the Pacific Division. I thought they were one of the six teams that had a legitimate chance to win the division. But I like their chances less without Corey Perry, I'll say that.
It is a loss. I look at Perry, and that's still an effective player. A dominant player? No, I don't think he is anymore. But still, that's a 50-point guy, and I think that you probably pencil him in for around 50 points again this year. What it does do, it makes that acquisition they made of Adam Henrique last year a little bit more important. You know, at the time, I wondered about it. You're like, geez, that depth on Anaheim's blue line has really been depleted. Now you trade another guy to bring in Henrique. I don't know if I loved it at the time. You look at it now. Corey Perry's out. Henrique can play the wing. He can play center. That's a big addition for them and an important guy that they have in the fold. So I'm not looking at Perry as a death blow. I mean, it's not something that you want to have happen, especially for a guy who's as important on that team, not just on the ice, but overall. But still, I think that they are a deep enough team at forward that they've got the ability to be able to withstand it, maybe better than some other teams would be.
They do have some depth at forward, but they don't have as much depth on defense as they once did. Because you talked about that trade that they made to bring in Henrique, and they lost Shea Theodore in the expansion draft, even a couple of veteran defensemen, and Kevin Bieksa and Francois Beauchemin. Well, Beauchemin's retired, and I think Bieksa's heading in that direction. So they might have some decent depth up front, but they don't have the depth on defense they once had.
I like the top four. I think there's certainly some questions about the third pair. Like, I don't know that Luke Shen offers you much, but Lindholm, Manson, Fowler, Montour, that's a great top four. Like, it's not the best in the league, but I feel like we put a lot of stock sometimes into a pair that doesn't get on the ice a ton. Nobody's third pair is really, really good, but when it matters, those top two pairs are going to be on the ice. I have no problem with Lindholm, Manson, Fowler, Montour. Those are two good top pairs.
Yep, fair enough.
Final topic on today's Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. Ryan Pinder, Pat Steinberg, Derek Wills along with you. I don't know how long we're going to talk about this for, because I don't know if it's going to be something that we're talking about come the regular season. But Ty Ratty had another hat trick last night, and he is the leading goal scorer for the Edmonton Oilers and the league in preseason scoring. Now, please do not start texting and telling me preseason means nothing. I know. I've seen plenty of guys score like they're superstars in the preseason, never to be heard from again once the regular season starts. But Ty Ratty on a line with Connor McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Are we buying or selling on Ty Ratty, Derek?
I'm buying on whoever is playing with Connor McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I mean, what an opportunity for Ty Ratty, or maybe we should call him Ty Hattie, with the way he's played in the preseason. But, you know, he's been a good fit on that line in the preseason. The question is, will he be a good fit on that line in the regular season? And that's still a big question mark for me. It would be an absolutely huge coup for the Oilers if he could fill that spot, because it allows them to use some other players to give them more depth in their forward groups and more scoring depth. Because I really look at the Oilers right now as a team that's top heavy at forward, and I really like their first two lines, but don't like their third and fourth lines as much. So if Ratty eats up a spot on that top line, and that pushes maybe a guy like Puljujarvi down into your bottom six, that's going to be a good thing for the Oilers and help them contend in the division this year.
All right, I'll take the other side just to make it a little more interesting. I'll sell on a 25-year-old with 9 career regular season goals. Yes, he's going to put up some points on the top line, but I'm of the opinion someone even like a Yamamoto is going to give them more over the course of a full season. It's a nice run, but I don't see a top-line NHLer there. I see a guy that, what, they added via waivers last year who's on a nice little run here.
It's interesting to me. It's interesting, guys, because I look at this and I was very interested in Ratty going into his draft year. He was very prolific in the Western Hockey League. He put up a ton of points to the Portland Winterhawks, but it just has never translated to the NHL. Now we're talking about a guy who is a number of years removed from his draft year, and I'm very skeptical. If you were to ask me right now, what's your gut say? I would say that this is more like the guy who pops in the preseason and is never to be heard again, as opposed to the revelation that just kind of gets put in the right spot, and next thing you know, he's a consistent NHLer. I'll be the first to say I'm wrong if it happens, but I would say I'm selling. I'm not buying Ty Ratty as a top-line NHLer. And Derek, your point is very good. Like, anybody who plays with Connor McDavid is going to be in a better spot. I get that, and having Nuge on that line too helps, but I can't see that being a fit for the entire season. I would be surprised if we're still talking in December about Ty Ratty as a top line right winger in Edmonton.
Yeah, I would be as well. And it's a lot easier to look good short term playing with those two guys than it is long term. Listen, it's not easy to play with elite players, and I think that's one of the reasons why the Flames have really been challenged to find somebody who's a perfect fit to play with Sean Monahan and Gaudreau. And you got to keep up with Connor McDavid, so you've got to have some speed. But I think you also need a guy on that line who can do what I think James Neal has the potential to do for Monahan and Gaudreau, and that's, you know, get into the forecheck and be physical and retrieve pucks. And I'm not sure Ratty fits that bill, so we'll see how it plays out. But you can't knock him for his preseason, that's for sure.
All right, Derek, good stuff, my man. You have yourself a wonderful rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow from San Jose. Thank you, buddy.
Safe travel.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is the Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable.